Everything you rely on, the food on your table, the car you take to work, the power in your home, it all gets to you because of one critical system, America's railroads. But it's a system that's quietly crumbling.
Unsafe working conditions.
4,600 railroad employees will be furloughed.
Layoffs at Norfolk Southern.
Safety issues will only get worse.
Four cars of a freight train derailed.
15 train cars here.
Dozens of train cars have derailed, causing major damage.
Major delays.
Backed up traffic.
Train cancellations.
There's no word yet on when the rails will be back open.
And we're on the verge of it getting much worse for everyone.
The corporations have dehumanized everything to the point where the people that run the corporations don't give a damn about the security of the United States. I'll go ahead and say that.
Over the last few decades, a handful of corporations hijacked our railroads. But now one company is angling for near total control.
Norfolk Southern could possibly merge with Union Pacific.
That transforms the North American rail market.
It's going to create the first single line transcontinental network in the United States.
This is pure profit for stockholders and hedge funds.
So how exactly would a $250 billion rail merger play out for farmers, shippers, and you?
I don't see how this will benefit, you know, farmers or consumers in any way.
Who's pulling the strings to make this mega merger happen?
Union Pacific CEO paid Trump a visit at the White House to try to lobby him into supporting the merger.
And how on earth did we get here?
You have the billionaire class running the show and everybody else is a serf.
The bread basket here, we produce everything we need for the whole country and basically the world, but we got to get rid of it because we don't need it all here. So that's where the railroads come in and are important to us.
Tim Veldy is a farmer who grows corn and soybeans in southern Minnesota.
This would be shipped from southwest Minnesota, where I live, would go out to the west coast and be unloaded there and then put on a ship and, you know, shipped to China or something like that.
Farmers have relied on railroads for over a century. But over the past few decades, a handful of companies have come to wield tremendous power over the farmers who depend on them.
It seems like as they consolidate, they aren't as easy to get along with. They just don't cooperate the way they used to.
We just have one railroad that serves this area. We're kind of bound to whatever they dictate in prices. And the higher the shipping cost, or the lower price that the farmer is going to get, because the shipping cost comes out of us.
Rail companies make 50% of their revenue from people like Tim, who have access to only one rail line. But the industry wasn't always like this. Back in 1970, there were 71 major rail companies in the U.S.
Our system of consolidation really began in the 1980s with the Staggers Act, which effectively deregulated the railroads.
The Staggers Act allowed railroads to set their own prices and abandon lines that weren't profitable. This era of deregulation kicked off a wave of mergers that left just 16 rail companies by the end of 1990. But the consolidation of our railroads didn't stop there.
Today's freight railroad system is a heavily consolidated system. We've got just six Class I railroads. Class I railroads are the biggest railroads, and they're effectively controlled by a national duopoly on two sides. On the western side, you have BNSF Railway and Union Pacific, and on the eastern half, you have Norfolk Southern and CSX.
And in a deregulated market where there's almost no competition, they can essentially charge customers whatever they want. But that's not the only thing that made rail companies so powerful. It was also that they had caught the attention of a certain type of investor, one that would fundamentally transform how railroads operated.
So Wall Street gets involved in railroads in the early 2010s through activist investors. The most notorious is CSX got raided by an activist investor called Mantle Ridge. And Mantle Ridge forced CSX to install a new CEO, Hunter Harrison.
If there was a LeBron James of the railway business, it would be Hunter Harrison.
Hunter Harrison's strategy for how to squeeze the most money out of railroads was something called precision scheduled railroading.
While the thought was, hey, let's run trains on time in a more organized fashion, what it really meant was just Wall Street speak for cutting costs, eliminating workers, cutting power, and cutting investment into the railroad system.
Under this pressure from investors, railroads started to cut costs anywhere they could. And the first place they looked was at workers.
We had five people on my first day out there. There were five people plus myself on a yard engine. And over time, they whittled it down to a three-man and then a two-man crew.
Hugh Sawyer has been a locomotive engineer for over 30 years. He's seen firsthand the changes that consolidation and Wall Street's cuts have brought to America's railroads.
With the institution of PSR, you know, they've reduced the maintenance away crews, and now they're letting the track deteriorate a little bit more. I'm not going to say unsafely, but, you know, you can tell it's a lot rougher by the time they get a crew in there.
From 2015 to 2020, railroads laid off 48,000 workers. Railroad Workers United, an organization of rank-and-file workers, has fought back against these cuts, which they argue increases stress on crews and ultimately makes the railroads less safe.
One of our big fights at the moment is to keep a two-man crew on the train because they want to go down to a one-man crew.
Imagine a modern train. Some of these trains are 2 miles long, 3 miles long, and railroads want there to be one person manning that entire train. Think about how egregious that is.
But cutting jobs wasn't enough for Wall Street investors. They also pushed rail companies to drive up prices.
Railroads have continually increased costs and pushed costs higher than inflation.
Freight rail prices have doubled over the past 20 years, increasing at a far higher rate than shipping by air, water, or truck. But rather than making railroads more reliable, mergers led to backlogs and service interruptions that impacted shipments of cars, pharmaceuticals, and other goods.
At some point, if you're a railroad customer, you say, hey, these prices are too high and the reliability is so low that I'm just going to move to truck.
But many things that travel by train, chemicals, coal, grain, can't be shipped any other way.
Think about the chemical manufacturer who has rail built into their facilities. It's not easy or feasible for them to switch to truck. So those are people who we call captive shippers. They have no other option but to ship on rail.
70% of Union Pacific's revenue comes from captive shippers.
The railroads have never suffered in the era of deregulation from a lack of money. But they've gotten ridiculous in what they want their profits down. They want their operating ratio down to like 50%. Give me a break.
Union Pacific also had the largest market capitalization of any rail company in the U.S. at an estimated $132 billion. This system has become immensely profitable for investors at the expense of shippers and workers. But rail companies aren't stopping here.
Railroad companies Union Pacific and Norfolk Southern proposed a merger.
And that would create a transcontinental railroad.
Union Pacific recently announced that it wants to merge with Norfolk Southern to create the first truly transcontinental railroad in the United States. So it would go from the western coast to the eastern coast and would really create the largest rail system that the United States has ever seen.
I'd be hard-pressed to find an example of where a merger actually benefited the common, everyday person. In most cases, a merger ends up benefiting usually, you know, the upper management or whatever. They put this together and they get a big bonus for doing it.
Union Pacific argues that this deal will allow them to operate more efficiently and reclaim some of the customers they've lost to trucks.
We have reason to be distrustful because we've already gone through this exercise many times before. They say that they're going to grow volumes. They never grow volumes. They say that workers' jobs are going to be preserved, and we see furloughs, layoffs, and worse bargaining power for railroad workers. They say that safety is going to be improved, and now we see hundreds of derailments a year.
This merger is only the tip of the iceberg.
That railroad doesn't serve our area, but thought is always in there. Well, you know, what's the next merger?
It's very likely that if this Union Pacific merger goes through, competitors will also merge, giving just two companies complete control of the entire U.S. rail system.
it's important to remember that monopolies aren't just bad economically. They're also bad for our political system. The fewer companies that you have in an industry, the more lobbying power they have. And we already see that. Massive freight railroad companies nowadays use their lobbying power to basically eradicate any regulation imposed on them.
The political power of Union Pacific could further deregulate the industry, making railroads less safe for workers and communities. But it's not a done deal yet.
Any mergers between Class I railroads have to be approved by the railroad's economic regulator, the Surface Transportation Board. And what the board's role is during this merger is it has to see whether or not this merger will enhance competition.
Already, a lobbying campaign is underway by the railroads. Union Pacific CEO Jim Vena recently met with President Trump.
By the way, the UP CEO is, you know, has his nose up Trump's tailpipe, and you know they're big buddies, and the only way you get to be a big buddy with Trump is with the money, of course. So Trump's all for this merger.
Trump can influence this merger by picking who will be appointed to the Surface Transportation Board.
Right now, the Surface Transportation Board, it has two Republican members and one Democratic member. Another Democratic member, Robert Primus, was recently illegally fired by Donald Trump.
To replace Primus, Trump nominated Richard Closser, a Republican former railroad consultant, and renominated Michelle Schultz, a current Republican member.
If those members are confirmed by the Senate, the board would stand at a 3-1 Republican majority after the illegal firing of Primus.
A business-friendly Republican majority makes it more likely that Union Pacific's merger will be approved. SMART-TD, the largest rail union, has endorsed the merger after striking a deal that guarantees jobs. But rank-and-file workers are still skeptical.
This is not for the betterment of the United States of America. This is not good for our national security. It's not good for our economy in the long run.
Union Pacific is speculated to file its official merger request in November. After that, the public will have a chance to submit comments and raise their concerns to the Surface Transportation Board, will ultimately decide the fate of this unprecedented mega merger.
I guess I would ask them to look and try to find instances where a consolidation has improved the service or made things better for the general public. That's what our federal government is supposed to be doing, is looking out for the interest of the public, not looking out for the best interest of companies.
There is hope. We can stop this merger. If you get excited enough to write your congressman or your senator, they actually pay attention to all that. If they start seeing a wave of people saying, you know, this isn't for the betterment of us as consumers or us as citizens or us as farmers, by the way, maybe we can bring it a halt.
Thanks for watching. Don't forget to like and subscribe to see more videos like this one. And if you have ideas for stories you want us to cover next, leave them in the comments.